Future-proof gold from Newstalk.
Now, the mapping of the human genome in 2003 was a momentous achievement that altered many scientific disciplines forever. It helped us ask and answer some of life's biggest questions about who we are and where we come from. Yet questions still remain. For instance, what about the origins of the anus? What is it? Where did it come from? Why don't we have more than one? Thankfully, scientists are an inquisitive bunch, and my next guest may have one or two answers for us. His name is Andreas Heinol. He is an evolutionary biologist and research group leader at the University of Bergen in Norway. Andreas, I was speaking to my producer before we started, and I said, if you started out your scientific career and you thought about what you wanted to study, what would you want to study? He said, I think I'd like to find the edges of the universe. And I said, yeah, okay, I can get that. And for me, I think I'd like to, you know, discover whether or not there is life on Mars. Or find a way to add to human perception. I think that would be, you know, why on earth would you devote your entire life to the anus?
Oh well, I was always interested in animals, and I'm not only interested in the anus, but also in brains and nerve cords and everything else. But I got focused onto the digestive system, and of course, to the digestive system there are two openings: it's the mouth and the anus.
Yeah. What is the definition of an anus? Like, I know that sounds like a stupid question, but presumably there are lots of different types.
Yes, there are many types, but in fact we summarize an opening. So it's a hole which is surrounded by tissue, and this is the posterior part of the gut, so which means on the end of the animal.
And this is one of the questions actually I've asked many times on the program and had no response from anyone. Why don't we just sweat out our waste? Like we sweat out some waste. Why don't we just sweat the waste out that we take in? Wouldn't that be much better than having a filthy process by which we get rid of our waste?
I mean, just think about how often you go to the toilet and then you think about how much you would have to sweat. And this is quite a large amount, especially when you have like particles, right? And so we sweat out a lot already, but these are not particles. So when we chew something, we also have to get rid of the remnants, which are smaller in particles. And this is why we don't sweat it out. And we are also big, right? When we would have, we're very, very skinny, it would work likely. But this is the way why we have it. And it's also with the other animals, which are larger. They need then this opening.
Are there other solutions to the waste problem other than anuses in the animal kingdom?
Yes. So some animals, which are a little bit smaller, or they are also quite big, jellyfish, for example, these are these things in the ocean, and which are mainly composed out of jelly. And these have only one opening to this. And so the food comes in to the same opening as the food goes again out, or the remnant of the food.
Okay, that doesn't sound very pleasant. And is that a more efficient system or a less efficient system than the one we have?
It's less efficient because you have to digest first and then spit it out again before you can eat again. Right. And there is some of these animals, they have a flow system inside this sac like gut, how it's called, because it only has one opening. And but it's less efficient, especially when you are tall animals. So you can think about how we would do it when we would only have one opening. And this is, of course, not a pleasant thought.
No, it's not. Thank you for putting it so politely. It really shines a light on the benefit of a one-way system, which is what we have.
Yes. And the other benefit of this one-way system is, of course, that you can structure it. And as everybody of the audience also knows, we have a mouth and there are teeth. So one part is specialized for chewing. And then it all runs into a stomach, where you have more an acidic environment, which also digests the proteins. And then it goes into a basic environment, the gut, where all the nutrients are taken up. So in the stomach, there are not many nutrients taken up. It's mainly happening in the posterior part. And then the whole rest gets dehydrated in the posterior part of the gut, and then it gets it exits the body.
If you have one of these one-way guts, does that mean you have to have an anus at the end? Is there any other solution to that?
Yes, so there should be at least one opening, and animals have solved in different ways. So there are some animals which have a so-called temporary anus, which is usually closed, and then only when there's enough or a lot of food coming into the gut, then it opens temporarily, and then the waste get released, and then it closes again. And some animals, so which were derived from a very small ancestor, in flatworms, you can find these. So they are small ancestors, and then some of these groups grow bigger and bigger, and then they needed to invent an anus. And then they did it not only one anus, they have multiple anuses, so on their back. And this is quite interesting. So it's about 30 to 40 holes in the back of the body. And these are multiple anuses.
I see. If we have this food coming down, is there a class of animals that have control? Because one of the great things about having this one-way system is that we can control how our deposits happen. I don't know why I'm struggling with this so much. I've talked with much dirtier things on this program. We have control over our rectum, essentially, and that means we can control when we go, and that is a great thing. To have bladder and anus control.
Yes, and this is driven in our bodies by ring-like musculature. So, but most animals don't have this ring. I mean, when I say most animals, I exclude all these mammals, right, and things. But many animals don't have this ring muscle, but they control by the excretion by contraction of the gut. So also our gut contracts. But we have control a little bit subconsciously about this, but the animals as well. So they can decide by gut contractions when they want to excrete.
Oh, really? So like, because it seems if you go to the zoo, it seems sometimes that, it, you know, like there's lots of people watching. It doesn't seem like they have any either control or care about when they are defecating. I'm being slightly facetious there, but all animals can choose when to do the business?
Yes. This is, of course, of an advantage. But
why is it an advantage to be able to control when you poop?
So that the food stays inside the gut, for example. So it does not just run out, because we have a very complex digestive tract. But in other animals, it's just a simple tube. There's not much specializations. And right. Then when you would put food in, and then it would run out on the other end without control. So they keep it in, and then they contract it. They squeeze it out, let's say.
Someone has just checked it in. I think that's an obvious one, that if you are eating, you can hang on to that food and you can move on to somewhere else, can't you? You can add to the food that you have. So you're not always hungry. You're not always trying to fill.
No, yeah. I mean, some animals, they eat a lot of mud and just need the small particles inside, like the earthworm, for example. They eat a lot of dirt, and then they eat continuously. But many animals, they just don't eat all the time. They do something else. They also need to reproduce to make more animals from their own species. So then they usually don't go to the toilet, let's say.
Are there any other evolutionary benefits to being able to control your toilet time?
Yes. When you see, for example, dogs in the street or so, then they use the poop also as a communication aspect. So you can use the smell, for example, for making your area where you are living and mark it and label it. But also, on the other hand, when you don't want to be detected by predators, for example, it's good to control this and then just poop there where it's not so easily detected and smelled, so that the predator can find you.
What about the molecular side of it? Because this is where you're looking at it from, and I find that really interesting, because I you know, when you think about the behaviors of animals and muscles and so on, the molecular side of it is not the first thing I would turn to try and find answers about where it came from.
Yes. So when you look at different hindguts and of animals, they of course need to be placed in the animal, and they need to know the position, and it also needs to be determined. And during the development of the embryo, each animal has genetic factors and genes and transcription factors which determine the location in the body of this opening. So it's like you can imagine a coordinate system and or a GPS system in the body. And then the cells which need to form the anus, they know by expressing these genes exactly that they have to form this hole or this opening. And this is, of course, interesting. And we looked at these genes and they are highly conserved between many, many different animals. And so we checked this gene expression in animals which have this so-called sac-like gut, for example, in jellyfish. And these genes are not expressed anywhere in the jellyfish. They don't even have the genes yet for making an anus. But there are some worms where we looked at and into it at the gene expression. And surprisingly, these genes were expressed in the so-called male gonopore. And because these animals don't have an anus, they only have a mouth. They, so as I said, they take up the food and spit it out, the remnants, later. And then they have an opening where, through which the sperm is released. And we found these genes, which are usually expressed in the hindgut or anus location, in these male gonopore. And this is now what we continue to investigate and really check. Is there a connection between the male gonopore and the anus evolution?
And so let me get this straight. You're saying there isn't a universal anus gene for all animals, that some animals have not evolved it because of the way they deal with waste, but that you have found an overlap between anus and sperm genes. Why would they be related?
This is exactly the question which we try to tackle now. Because how easy is it to evolve a hole, right? To make a hole. And if you have already a hole present for releasing the gametes, which, for example, sperm or oocytes, they also need to be released through the body, then you can co-opt this hole for other functions. And for example, there are birds, turtles, and also some other vertebrates and fish. They have a so-called cloaca. So there's a common opening with the anus and also the place where the gametes are released.
Yep.
So, yeah. And even in our own embryogenesis, we have this connection at the beginning. And then later, these holes separate from each other.
So we start off with our junk and the waste system. Also, they're united in the beginning of our sort of embryonic development, and then they sort of separate.
Exactly. So in principle, in the mother's belly, we develop a cloaca first, although it's of course not used, and then later these common hole separates into two. And this is also why they are kind of close together.
Right. Okay. So I guess that would explain why the genes are overlapping from because they may have been common to both of those at an earlier stage of evolution.
Yes.
Yeah. Very interesting stuff. By the way, I'm just reminded of a video that was on Michael Mosley's program a few years back. We're going to tweet it. It's of the fetus, human fetus through development, where the eyes are on the side of our, when we used to be fish, right? The beginning of evolution, well, not the beginning, but at a midpoint of evolution, there's an amazing animation of how our eyes go from the side of our heads to the front of our heads in our mother's belly. It is the most amazing thing you've ever seen. It really gives you a sort of a bird's eye view of how we have evolved. But fascinating speaking with you, Andreas Heinol. Thanks very much for taking us through that with very little titters and very small amount of tortoise humor. Andreas, thanks for your time.
Okay, thank you.